This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Material is selected with the interests of its audiences in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Hello, and welcome to the African American Experience, a program celebrating the artistic, cultural, and historic contributions of African Americans. This program has been created and produced by Audio Journal's Roy Allen Project to carry on the work and vision of its namesake. Roy Allen was an extraordinary human being who deeply touched the lives of his family, his friends, and his colleagues. He was a trailblazer for African Americans in the fields of theater, radio, and television. In carrying on Roy's vision to inspire the African American community to a sense of pride and power in its achievements and to share those achievements with all the community, we present the African American Experience with your host, Tina E. Gaffney. Well, hello, everyone. And on this episode of the African American Experience, I thought it would be rather exceptional to highlight an individual that you don't hear very much about these days. But wow, the achievements that they brought to fruition are rather extraordinary. Paul Robeson. Paul Leroy Robeson was born April the 9th, 1898, and passed on January the 23rd, 1976. He was an African-American bass baritone concert artist, actor, professional football player, and activist, who became famous both for his cultural accomplishments and for his political stances. He was born in Princeton, New Jersey. He passed in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on January the 23rd, 1976. His resting place is the Fern Cliff Cemetery in Greenberg, New York. In addition to his resting place being in the Fern Cliff Cemetery, while he was among the living, he received his education at a few places. Rutgers University in New Brunswick, he received a Bachelor of Arts. New York University and Columbia University, he received his LLB and SOAS, University of London. He was a singer, actor, activist, and athlete. Known for Showboat, The Emperor Jones, Othello, All God's Children Got Wings. He was married to Islanda Good, then married in 1921, and she passed in 1965. They had a son, Paul Robeson Jr. His parents were William Drew Robeson and Maria Louise Bustill, and the Bustill family are their relatives. In football, his position was the end tackle. He was listed as 6'3" in height, and his listed weight was 219 pounds. He went to high school in Somerville, New Jersey, and college at Rutgers. His career history, he was a member of the Akron Pros in 1921 and the Milwaukee Badgers in 1922. In 1917 and 1918, he received 2 consensus All-American awards. He played in 15 games, made 2 touchdowns at the Pro Football Reference, and he's in the College Football Hall of Fame. In 1915, Robeson won an academic scholarship to Rutgers College in New Brunswick, New Jersey, where he was the only African-American student. While at Rutgers, he was twice named a consensus All-American in football and was elected class valedictorian. He earned his LLB from Columbia Law School while playing in the National Football League or the NFL. After graduation, he became a figure in the Harlem Renaissance with performances in Eugene O'Neill's The Emperor Jones, and All God's Chillin' Got Wings. Robeson performed in Britain in the touring melodrama Voodoo in 1922 and in Emperor Jones in 1925. In 1928, he scored a major success in the London premiere of Showboat. Living in London for several years with his wife, Islanda, Robeson continued to establish himself as a concert artist, and he starred in a London production of Othello, the first of three productions of the play over the course of his career. He also gained attention in Sanders of the River in 1935 and in the production of Showboat in 1936. Robeson's political activities began with his involvement with unemployed workers and anti-imperialist students in Britain, and it continued with his support for the Republican cause during the Spanish Civil War, the Soviet Union, and Joseph Stalin, and his involvement in the Council on African Affairs. During the Second World War, Robeson initially opposed Allied war efforts and U.S. entry into the conflict during the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, but he became a highly vocal supporter of the war efforts after the German invasion of the Soviet Union. His history of supporting Soviet policies brought scrutiny from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. After the war, the Council on African Affairs was placed on the Attorney General's list of subversive organizations. Robeson was investigated during the McCarthy era, when he refused to recant his public advocacy for the Soviet Union. The U.S. State Department withdrew his passport, and his income plummeted. He moved to Harlem and published a periodical called Freedom, which was critical of United States policies from 1950 to 1955. Robeson's right to travel was eventually restored as a result of the 1958 United States Supreme Court decision Kent versus Dulles. Between 1925 and 1961, Robeson released recordings of about 270 songs. The first of these was the spiritual Steal Away, backed with Were You There in 1925. Robeson's recorded repertoire spanned many styles, including Americana, popular standards, classical music, European folk songs, political songs, poetry, and spoken excerpts from plays. Robeson was born in Princeton, New Jersey in 1898 to Reverend William Drew Robeson and Maria Louisa Bustill. His mother was a member of the Bustills, a prominent Quaker family of mixed ancestry. His father was of Igbo origin and was born into slavery. William escaped from a plantation in his teens and eventually became the minister of Princeton's Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church in 1881. Robeson had three brothers, William Drew Jr., born 1881, Reeve, born circa 1887, and Ben, born circa 1893, and one sister, Marion, born circa 1895. In 1900, a disagreement between William and white financial supporters of the Witherspoon Church arose with apparent racial undertones which were prevalent in Princeton. William, who had the support of his entirely African-American congregation, resigned in 1901. The loss of his position forced him to work menial jobs. 3 years later, when Robeson was six, his mother, who was nearly blind, passed in a house fire. Eventually, William became financially incapable of providing a house for himself and his children still living at home, Ben and Paul, so they moved into the attic of a store in Westfield, New Jersey. William found a stable parsonage at the St. Thomas A.M.E. Zion in 1910, where Robeson filled in for his father during sermons when he was called away. When his father was called away, in 1912, Robeson began attending Somerville High School in New Jersey, where he performed in Julius Caesar and Othello, sang in the chorus, and excelled in football, basketball, baseball, and track. His athletic dominance elicited racial taunts, which he ignored. Prior to his graduation, he won a statewide academic contest for a scholarship to Rutgers and was named class valedictorian. He took a summer job as a waiter in Narragansett Pier, Rhode Island, where he befriended Fritz Pollard, later to be the first African-American coach in the National Football League. In late 1915, Robeson became the third African-American student ever to enroll, and the only one at the time, at Rutgers. He tried out for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights football team, and his resolve to make the squad was tested when his teammates engaged in excessive play, during which his nose was broken and his shoulder dislocated. The coach, Foster Sanford, decided that Robeson had overcome the provocation and announced that he had made the team. Robeson joined the Rutgers debating team. He sang off-campus for spending money, and on-campus with the Glee Club informally, as membership required, attending all Caucasian mixers. He also joined the other collegiate athletic teams. As a sophomore, amidst Rutgers' sesquicentennial celebration, Robeson was benched when a Southern football team, Washington and Lee University, refused to take the field because the Scarlet Knights had fielded an African-American. After a standout junior year of football, he was recognized in the Crisis publication for his athletic, academic, and singing talents. At that time, his father fell grievously ill. Robeson took the sole responsibility in caring for him, shutting between Rutgers and Somerville. His father, who was the glory of his boyhood years, soon passed away, and at Rutgers, Robeson expounded on the incongruity of African Americans fighting to protect America during World War I, but not having the same opportunities in the United States as whites. Robeson was part of the Rutgers University class of 1919 and one of four students accepted into the Cap and Skull Honor Society. He finished university with four annual oratorical triumphs and varsity letters in multiple sports. His football playing as end won him first team All-American selection in both his junior and senior years. Walter Camp considered him the greatest end ever. Academically, Robeson was accepted into Phi Beta Kappa and Kappan Skull. His classmates recognized him by electing him class valedictorian. The Daily Targum published a poem featuring his achievements. In his valedictory speech, he exhorted his classmates to work for equality for all Americans. At Rutgers, Robeson also gained a reputation for his singing. His voice was described as deep and rich. Some saw it as bass with a high range, others as baritone with low notes. Throughout his career, Robeson was classified as a bass baritone. Robeson entered New York University School of Law in the autumn of 1919. To support himself, he became an assistant football coach at Lincoln University, where he joined the Alpha Pi Alpha fraternity. However, Robeson felt uncomfortable at NYU and moved to Harlem, then transferred to Columbia Law School in February 1920. Already known in the African-American community for his singing, he was selected to perform at the dedication of the Harlem YWCA. Robeson began dating Islanda or Essie Good, and after her coaxing, he made his theatrical debut as Simon in Ridgely Torrance's Simon the Cyrenian. After a year of courtship, they were married in August of 1921. Robeson was recruited by Fritz Pollard to play for the NFL's Akron Pros while he continued his law studies. In the spring of 1922, Robeson postponed school to portray Jim in Mary Hoyt Weiborg's play Taboo. He then sang in the chorus of an off-Broadway production of Shuffle Along before he joined Taboo in Britain. The play was adapted by Mrs. Patrick Campbell to highlight his singing. After the play's run ended, he befriended Lawrence Benjamin Brown, a classically trained musician, before returning to Columbia while playing for the NFL's Milwaukee Badgers. Robeson ended his football career after the 1922 season, and he graduated from Columbia Law School in 1923. Robeson briefly worked as a lawyer, but renounced a career in law because of racism. His wife supported them financially. She was the head histological chemist in surgical pathology at New York Presbyterian Hospital. She continued to work there until Robeson's career took off in 1925. The couple frequented the social functions at the future Schoenberg Center. In December of 1924, he landed the lead role of Jim in Eugene O'Neill's All God's Children Got Wings, which culminated with Jim metaphorically consummating his marriage with his white wife by symbolically emasculating himself. Children's opening was postponed due to a nationwide controversy over its plot. Children's delay led to a revival of The Emperor Jones with Robeson as Brutus, a role pioneered by Charles Sidney Gilpin. The role terrified and galvanized Robeson, as it was practically a 90-minute soliloquy. Reviews declared him an unequivocal success, though arguably clouded by its controversial subject. His Jim in Chillin was less well-received. He answered criticism of its plot by writing that fate had drawn him to the, quote, untrodden path, unquote, of drama. That the true measure of a culture is in its artistic contributions, and that the only true American culture was African American. The success of his acting placed him in elite social circles, and his rise to fame, which was forcefully aided by Essie, happened very rapidly. Essie's ambition for Robeson was a startling dichotomy to his indifference. She quit her job, became his agent, and negotiated his first movie role in a silent race film directed by Oscar Michaud, Body and Soul, 1925. To support a charity for single mothers, Robeson headlined a concert singing spirituals. He also performed his repertoire of spirituals on the radio. Lawrence Benjamin Brown, a renowned pianist who toured with gospel singer Roland Hayes, chanced upon Robeson in Harlem. The two ad-libbed a set of spirituals with Robeson as lead and Brown as accompanist. This so enthralled them that they booked Provincetown Playhouse for a concert. The pair's rendition of African-American folk songs and spirituals was captivating, and Victor Records signed Robeson to a contract in September of 1925. The Robesons went to London for a revival of The Emperor Jones, before spending the rest of the fall on holiday on the French Riviera, socializing with Gertrude Stein and Claude McKay. Robeson and Brown performed a series of concert tours in America from January 1926 until May 1927. During a hiatus in New York, Robeson learned that Essie was several months pregnant. Paul Robeson Jr. was born in November of 1927 in New York, while Robeson and Brown toured Europe. Essie experienced complications from the birth, and by mid-December, her health had deteriorated dramatically. Ignoring Essie's objections, her mother wired Robeson, and he immediately returned to her bedside. Essie completely recovered after a few months. In 1928, Robeson portrayed Joe in the London production of the American musical Showboat at the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane. His rendition of Old Man River became the benchmark for all future performers of the song. In fact, Jerome Kern told friends he formulated the melody to Old Man River in 1926, after hearing the, quote, organ-like tones of Robeson's speaking voice. Soon after, Kem met with Robeson in his Harlem apartment, where Kem played solo piano while Robeson sang the new song. While all that was going on with Jerome Kern, some African-American critics objected to Showboat due to the use of racial terms that were negative. It was nonetheless immensely popular with white audiences. Of his 1932 Broadway performance of the song, novelist Edna Ferber noted, quote, "I have never seen an ovation like that given any figure of the stage. The audience stood up and howled." The show stopped. He sang it again. The show stopped. They called him back again and again. Robeson was summoned for a Royal Command performance at Buckingham Palace and was befriended there by members of Parliament from the House of Commons. Showboat continued for 350 performances and, as of 2001, it remained the Royals' most profitable venture. The Robesons bought a home in Hampstead. He reflected on his life in his diary and wrote that it was all part of a higher plan and, quote, "God watches over me and guides me. He's with me and lets me fight my own battles and hopes I'll win," end quote. After Robeson was refused seating at the Savoy Grill, he issued a press release describing the incident and insult, which subsequently became a matter of public debate. Essie had learned early in their marriage that Robeson had extramarital affairs, but she initially tolerated them. However, she unfavorably altered the characterization of him in his biography and defamed him by describing him with, quote, negative racial stereotypes, end quote. Despite her uncovering of this tryst, there is no public evidence that their relationship has soured. The couple appeared in the experimental Swiss film Borderline in 1930. Robeson then returned to the Savoy Theatre in London's West End to portray the title role of Othello, opposite Peggy Ashcroft as Desdemona. He cited the lack of a racial problem in London as significant in his decision to move to there. Robeson was the first African-American actor to portray Othello in Britain since Ira Aldridge. The production received mixed reviews that noted Robeson's highly civilized quality but lacking the grand style. End quote. Robeson stated the best way to diminish the oppression that African Americans faced was for his artistic work to be an example of what, quote, men of my color, end quote, could accomplish rather than to be a propagandist and to make speeches and write articles about what they call the color question, end quote. After Essie discovered Robeson had been having an affair with Ashcroft, she sought a divorce and they separated. While working in London, Robeson became one of the first artists to record at the new EMI recording studio, later known as Abbey Road Studios, recording four songs in September of 1931, almost 2 months before the studio was officially opened. Robeson returned to Broadway as Joe in the 1932 revival of Showboat with Maude Simmons and others to critical and popular acclaim. He received with immense pride an honorary master's degree from Rutgers. It is said that Foster Sanford, his college football coach, advised him that divorcing Essie and marrying Ashcroft would do irreparable damage to his reputation. In any case, Ashcroft and Robeson's relationship ended in 1932. And Robeson and Essie reconciled, but their relationship was permanently scarred. In 1933, Robeson portrayed the role of Jim in the London production of Chillin' virtually for free, then returned to the United States to star as Brutus in the film The Emperor Jones, the first film to feature an African-American in a starring role, quote, a feat not repeated for more than two decades in the United States, end quote. His acting in The Emperor Jones was well received. On the film set, he rejected any slight to his dignity, despite the widespread Jim Crow atmosphere in the United States. Upon returning to England, he publicly criticized African Americans' rejection of their own culture, despite negative reactions from the press, such as a New York Amsterdam News retort that Robeson had made a jolly well fool of himself. He also announced that he would reject any offers to perform Central European, though not Russian, which he considered Asiatic opera because the music had no connection to his heritage. In early 1934, Robeson enrolled in the School of Oriental and African Studies, a constituent college of the University of London, where he studied phonetics and Swahili. His sudden interest in African history and its influence on culture coincided with his essay, I Want to Be African, where he wrote of his desire to embrace his ancestry. His friends in the anti-imperialist movement and his association with British socialists led him to visit the Soviet Union. Robeson, Essie, and Marie Seton traveled to the Soviet Union on an invitation from Sergei Eisenstein in December of 1934. A stopover in Berlin enlightened Robeson to the racism in Nazi Germany, and on his arrival in Moscow, Robeson said, quote, "Here I am not a Negro, but a human being for the first time in my life. I walk in full human dignity," end quote. He undertook the role of Bosambo in the movie Sanders of the River in 1935, with the intent of rendering a realistic view of colonial African culture. Sanders of the River made Robeson an international movie star, but the stereotypical portrayal of a colonial African was seen as embarrassing to his stature as an artist and damaging to his reputation. The Commissioner of Nigeria to London protested the firm and the film the firm made as slanderous to his country, and Robeson thereafter became more politically conscious in his choice of roles. He appeared in the play Steve Dorr at the Embassy Theatre in London in May of 1935, which was favorably reviewed in The Crisis by Nancy Cunard, who concluded, quote, "Steve Dorr is extremely valuable in the racial social question. It is straight from the shoulder." In early 1936, he decided to send his son to school in the Soviet Union to shield him from racist attitudes. Robeson then portrayed the role of Toussaint Louverture in the eponymous play by C.L.R. James at the Westminster Theatre, and he appeared at the Westminster Theatre in the films Song of Freedom and Showboat in 1936, and My Son Goes Forth, King Solomon's Mines, and Big Fella, all in 1937. In 1938, he was named by American Motion Picture Herald as the 10th most popular star in British cinema. Robeson photographed in a picture featuring Henry A. Wallace, Albert Einstein, and Frank Kingdon at Einstein's home in Princeton, New Jersey on September the 21st, 1947. In 1935, Robeson met Albert Einstein when Einstein came backstage after Robeson's concert at the MacArthur Theater. The two discovered that, as well as a mutual passion for music, they shared a hatred for fascism. Their friendship between Robeson and Einstein lasted nearly 20 years, but was not well known or publicized. Robeson attended an event honoring those killed in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade on February the 26th, 1941. One of the people that attended that with him was Lincoln Battalion Commander Milton Wolf. Robeson believed that the struggle against fascism during the Spanish Civil War was a turning point in his life, and transformed him into a political activist. In 1937, he used his concert performances to advocate the Republican cause and the war's refugees. He permanently modified his renditions of Old Man River, initially by singing different words instead of racial slurs, later by changing some of the stereotypical dialect in the lyrics to standard English and replacing the fatalistic last verse, "I gets weary and sick of trying, I'm tired of living, I'm scared of dying," with an uplifting verse of his own, "But I keep laughing instead of crying, I must keep fighting until I'm dying," transforming it from a tragic song of resignation with a hint of protest implied into a battle hymn of unwavering defiance. His business agent expressed concern about his political involvement, but Robeson overruled him and decided that contemporary events trumped commercialism. In Wales, he commemorated the Welsh people killed while fighting for the Republicans by recording a message that became his epitaph. Quote, "The artist must take sides. He must elect to fight for freedom or slavery. I have made my choice. I had no alternative." Robeson also sang for soldiers of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade at Terrell in January of 1938. After an invitation from J.B.S. Haldane, he traveled to Spain in 1938 because he believed in the International Brigade's cause. There, he visited the hospital of Benicassim, singing to the wounded soldiers. Robeson also visited the battlefront and provided a morale boost to the Republicans at a time when their victory was unlikely. Back in England, he hosted Jawaharlal Nehru to support Indian independence, where Nehru expounded on imperialism's affiliation with fascism. Robeson reevaluated the direction of his career and decided to concentrate on the ordeals of common people. He appeared in the pro-labor play Plant in the Sun, in which he portrayed an Irishman, his first white role, with Max Jurgen and the International Committee on African Affairs, later known as the Council on African Affairs. Robeson became known as an advocate for African nationalism and political independence. Robeson performed at the Birmingham Town Hall in England on March 7, 1939, in aid of a local charity, the Birmingham Mall Christmas Tree Fund. The advertised pianist was Lawrence Brown. Robeson lived in Britain until the start of the Second World War in 1939. His name was included in the Sonder von Dungeliste GB as a target for arrest if Germany had occupied Britain. Robeson led the Moore Shipyard in Oakland, California workers in singing the Star-Spangled Banner in 1942. Robeson's last British film was The Proud Valley in 1940, set in a Welsh coal mining town. The film was still being shot while Hitler's invasion of Poland led to Britain's declaration of war at the beginning of September 1939. Several weeks later, just after the completion of filming, Robeson and his family returned to the United States, arriving in New York on October of 1939. They lived at the first Sugar Hill neighborhood of Harlem, and in 1941, settled in Enfield, Connecticut. After his well-received performance of Ballad for Americans on a live CBS radio broadcast on November the 5th, with a repeat performance on New Year's Day, 1940, the song became a popular seller. In 1940, the magazine Collier's named Robeson America's number one entertainer. Nevertheless, during a tour in 1940, the Beverly Wilshire Hotel was the only major Los Angeles hotel willing to accommodate him due to his race. Robeson paid an exorbitant rate and registered under an assumed name, and he therefore dedicated 2 hours every afternoon to sitting in the lobby, where he was widely recognized, to ensure that the next time African Americans come through, they'll have a place to stay. Los Angeles hotels lifted their restrictions on African American guests soon afterward. Robeson narrated the 1942 documentary Native Land, which was labeled by the FBI as communist propaganda. After an appearance in Tales of Manhattan in 1942, a production that he felt was very offensive to my people because of the way the sergeant
was handled, the segment with the sergeant in it was handled in stereotypes. He announced that he would no longer act in films because of the demeaning roles available to African Americans. As a member of an anti-color line delegation to Major League Baseball in December the 3rd, 1943, it was Max Yeagan, Robert Murphy, Peter Caccione, Benjamin J. Davis, Jr., C.B. Powell, Ira F. Lewis, Paul Robeson, and Adam Clayton Powell, Jr. According to Barry Finger's critical appraisal of Robeson, while the Hitler-Stalin Pact was still in effect, Robeson counseled African Americans that they had no stake in the rivalry of European powers. After Russia was attacked, he urged African Americans to support the war effort, warning that an Allied defeat would make slaves of us all. Robeson also appeared with Uta Hagen, who, for those of you who don't know, is who a very famous actor studied with by the name of Whoopi Goldberg in 1943 to 1944. Robeson participated in benefit concerts himself on behalf of the war effort. At a concert at the Polo Grounds, he met two emissaries from the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee, Solomon Mikoles and Itzik Pfeffer. Subsequently, Robeson reprised the role of Othello at the Schubert Theater in 1943 and became the first African-American to portray the role with a white supporting cast on Broadway. The production was a success, running for 296 performances on Broadway, a record for a Shakespeare production on Broadway that still stands, and winning for Robeson the very first Donaldson Award for Best Actor in a Play. During the same period, he addressed a meeting with Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis and team owners in a failed attempt to convince them to admit African-American players to Major League Baseball. Robeson toured North America with Othello until 1945, and subsequently, his political efforts with the Council on African-American Affairs to get colonial powers to discontinue their exploitation of Africa were short-circuited by the United Nations. During this period, Robeson also developed sympathy for the Republic of China's side in the Second Sino-Japanese War. In 1940, the Chinese progressive activist Liu Liangmo taught Robeson the patriotic song Chi Lai, which means arise, known as the March of the Volunteers. Robeson premiered the song at a concert in New York City's Louis Holmes Stadium, and recorded it in both English and Chinese for Keynote Records in early 1941. Robeson gave further performances at benefit concerts for the China Aid Council and United China Relief at Washington's Uline Arena on April the 24th, 1941. The Washington Committee for Aid to China's booking of Constitution Hall had been blocked by the Daughters of the American Revolution because of Robeson's race. The indignation was so great that Eleanor Roosevelt and Zhu Xi, the Chinese ambassador, became sponsors. However, when the organizers offered tickets on generous terms to the National Negro Congress to help fill the larger venue, both sponsors withdrew, objecting to the NNC's communist ties. Robeson opposed the U.S. support for Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang in China, and he denounced U.S. support for Chiang at political events over the course of 1945 through 1946, including the Soviet-controlled World Peace Council and the National Peace Commission. In Robeson's view, the Kuomintang's anti-communist force, there were some who didn't think the Kuomintang's force and communist focus wasn't communist at all. And the blockade of the communist guerrilla army meant that China was fighting Japan with one hand tied behind its back. March of the Volunteers, Chile, became the newly founded People's Republic of China national anthem after 1949. Its Chinese lyricist, Qian Han, passed in a Beijing prison in 1968, a victim of the Chinese Cultural Revolution, but Robeson continued to send royalties to his family. After the Moore's Ford lynchings of four African Americans in Georgia on July the 25th, 1946, Robeson met with President Truman and admonished Truman by stating that if he did not enact legislation to end lynching, the Negroes will defend themselves. Truman immediately terminated the meeting and declared that the time was not right to propose anti-lynching legislation. Subsequently, Robeson publicly called upon all Americans to demand that Congress pass civil rights legislation. Robeson founded the American Crusade Against Lynching organization in 1946. This organization was thought to be a threat to the NAACP anti-violence movement. Robeson received support from W.E.B. Du Bois on this matter and launched the organization on the anniversary of the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, September 23rd. About this time, Robeson's belief that trade unionism was crucial to civil rights became a mainstay of his political beliefs as he became a proponent of the Union Activist and Communist Party, USA. Member Rebels Caton, Robeson was later called before the Tenney Committee, where he responded to questions about his affiliation with the Communist Party, USA, by testifying that he was not a member of the party. Nevertheless, two organizations with which Robeson was immediately involved, the Civil Rights Congress and the Congress on African American Affairs, were placed on the Attorney General's list of subversive organizations. Subsequently, Robeson was summoned before the United States Senate Committee on the Judiciary and, when questioned about his affiliation with the Communist Party, he refused to answer, stating, quote, "Some of the most brilliant and distinguished Americans are about to go to jail for the failure to answer that question, and I am going to join them if necessary," end quote. In 1948, Robeson was prominent in Henry A. Wallace's bid for the presidency of the United States. Robeson traveled to the Deep South at risk to his own life to campaign for Wallace. In the ensuing year, Robeson was forced to go overseas to work because his U.S. concert performances were canceled at the FBI's behest. On April the 20th, 1949, Robeson spoke at the Paris Peace Congress, saying, quote, "We in America do not forget that it was on the backs of the white workers from Europe and on the backs of millions of African Americans that the wealth of America was built, and we are resolved to share it equally. We reject any hysterical raving that urges us to make war on anyone. Our will to fight for peace is strong. We shall not make war on anyone. We shall not make war on the Soviet Union. We oppose those who wish to build up imperialist Germany and to establish fascism in Greece. We wish peace with Franco-Spain despite her fascism. We shall support peace and friendship among all nations with Soviet Russia and the People's Republics." He was blacklisted for saying that in the mainstream press within the United States, including, after he said that, many periodicals of the African American press, including The Crisis. The Associated Press published a false transcript of his speech, giving the impression that Robeson had equated America with a fascist state. In an interview, Robeson said that, quote, the danger of fascism in the U.S. has averted, end quote. Nevertheless, the speech publicly attributed to him was a catalyst for his being seen as an enemy of mainstream America. While Robeson advocated in favor of 12 defendants, including his longtime friend Benjamin J. Davis Jr., charged during the Smith Act trials of Communist Party leaders, he publicly denounced a resolution in favor of including members of the Trotskyite Socialist Workers Party, who were also being prosecuted under the Smith Act, declaring them allies of fascism and enemies of the working class. Robeson traveled to Moscow in June of 1949 to seek Itzhak Pfeffer, whom he had met during World War II. He let Soviet authorities know that he wanted to see Pfeffer. Reluctant to lose Robeson as a propagandist for the Soviet Union, the Soviets brought Pfeffer from prison to Robeson. Pfeffer told him that Mikhalis had been murdered and predicted that he would be executed, which he was, in Lubyanka prison on August the 12th of 1952. To protect the Soviet Union's reputation and to keep the right wing of the United States from gaining the moral high ground, Robeson denied that any persecution existed in the Soviet Union, keeping that meeting secret for the rest of his life, except for his son. Robeson's son would later recount that his father had explained to him how, quote, sometimes great injustices may be inflicted on the minority when the majority is in the pursuit of a great and just cause, end quote. To isolate Robeson politically, the House Un-American Activities Committee subpoenaed Jackie Robinson to comment on Robeson's Paris speech. Robinson testified that Robeson's statements, quote, if accurately reported, were silly, end quote. Former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt noted, quote, Mr. Robeson does his people great harm in trying to line them up on the communist side of the political picture. Jackie Robinson helps them greatly by his forthright statements, end quote. Days later, the announcement of a concert headlined by Robeson in New York City provoked the local press to decry the use of their community to support subversives. End quote. The Peekskill riots ensued, during which violent anti-Robeson protests shut down a Robeson concert on August the 27th of 1949 and marred the aftermath of the replacement concert held 8 days later. In his review of Christy Walsh's massive 1949 reference, College Football and All-American Review, the Los Angeles Times praised it as the most complete source of past gridiron scores, players, coaches, etc., yet published. But it failed to list Robeson as ever having played on the Rutgers team, or ever having been an All-American. Months later, NBC canceled Robeson's appearance on Eleanor Roosevelt's television program, which furthered his erasure from public view. Robeson opposed U.S. involvement in the Korean War and condemned America's nuclear threats against China. In Robeson's opinion, the U.S. had manipulated the United Nations for imperialist purposes, and China's intervention in the Korean War was necessary to defend the security of millions of people in Asia. Robeson credited American peace sentiment as a crucial factor in President Truman not using nuclear weapons and in recalling General Douglas MacArthur. In 1950, Robeson co-founded with W.E.B. Du Bois a monthly newspaper, Freedom, showcasing his views and those of his circle. Most issues had a column by Robeson on the front page. In the final issue, July-August of 1955, an unsigned column on the front page of the newspaper describes the struggle for the restoration of his passport. He called for support from the leading African-American organizations and asserted that, quote, Negroes and all Americans who have breathed a sigh of relief at the easing of international tensions have a stake in the Paul Robeson passport case. An article by Robeson appeared on the second page continuing the passport issue under the headline, quote, If enough people write Washington, I'll get my passport in a hurry. And like I say, folks, that's why you always have to explore, connect, create, and inspire. You have been listening to The African American Experience, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. I'm Tina E. Gaffney. Thank you for listening.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. When taking public transportation, you might read a book or listen to a podcast. But what if you used your commute to do a little birding? On the way to the bus or train stop, you might see a common grackle hopping along the curb. Or hear a house finch belting it out from a street tree. If the light rail goes over a river or passes by the shore, keep an eye out for gulls, herons, and birds that go diving for fish. And on the ride, you can also take comfort in knowing that you're helping birds by using public transportation and avoiding a potential car trip. By carrying more people in a single vehicle, mass transit can use less energy than cars. Taking steps to reduce greenhouse gas emissions can help the hundreds of bird species put at risk by climate change. Not to mention, while driving a car, you can't just relax and tune in to the birds all around you. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Remmel. This episode is dedicated to Kit Ellis of Gig Harbor, Washington, with thanks for her generous support of Bird Note.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is Do Not Stand at My Grave and Weep by Mary Elizabeth Fry. Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I am a thousand winds that blow. I am the diamond glints on snow. I am the sun on ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn's rain. When you awaken in the morning's hush, I am the swift uplifting rush of quiet birds in circling flight. I am the stars that shine at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal, and read by me, Nikki Wichelow. Thanks for listening. May your life be filled with the magic of poetry.